Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
A few weeks ago, I saw, I can't remember if it was an advert or an article by a number of big corporates saying that they had committed hundreds of millions of rands to the government's Black Industrialist Project. And I did wonder about this. I don't know very much about what a Black Industrialist is as opposed to an industrialist. And to this end, I thought I would bring onto the program somebody who could probably explain this better than almost anyone. Donald Mackay is the CEO of XA Global Trade Advisors and has been advising businesses both locally and abroad on trade and industrial policy issues for over 20 years. Donald, I don't think that begins to do your resume justice, but welcome to the IRR show.
Good morning, Sarah.
Donald, what can you just flesh out a little bit about what this has involved? Because you have a considerable reputation with regard to trade and industrial policy issues, and perhaps give our listeners an idea, because I suspect there is sort of naive as I am.
Sure. Well, to really make sense of this, we have to take a couple of steps before this program came into existence. So in 2007, then Minister of Trade and Industry Rob Davies published his first industrial policy action plan. And this really launched South Africa's very deliberate venture into using industrial policy to try to grow the economy, improve the employment situation, reduce inequality, reduce poverty, etc. This kind of chugs along for a bit with somewhat predictably poor outcomes. And it's then decided that this really needs to be ramped up into something more. And so the Black Industrialist Program gets added. And the Black Industrialist Program says it's not good enough for government to intervene in the market to try to get certain sectors to invest in certain ways, to reduce imports, etc. As a subset of that program, we also need to get more Black industrialists created. So this is attempting to say government puts quite a lot of money behind this program. The most recent number is over 50 billion has so far been given either as government grants or as friendly loans to these businesses. The key criteria to qualify is twofold. The one is you have to be Black, and the second one is you have to be manufacturing something. So this doesn't apply to someone offering a service into the market. Now, as with many of these programs, I think the intentions are quite good. It's saying that much like the BEE programs, the idea here is that we live with this legacy of apartheid. Black people are still getting the short end of the stick. Let's try to fix that problem by government trying to direct some of this investment. And that kind of brings us to where we are now. So it's a subset of our industrial policy, but it's the part of our industrial policy that that requires you to have a particular skin color to receive a benefit.
Donald, just to clarify, when we're talking about industrialists, we're talking about owners and managers of a business. So are these people whose businesses or ownership of businesses have to have existed before they get support from the government, or is the intention to create them from afresh?
So it's both, but ownership, that's an important observation, actually. Sorry. So ownership is the criteria here. So this is not the equivalent of BEE, where you've got to have a certain number of Black people in management, etc. This is very much an ownership program.
Mm-hmm. So the thing I understand then is that you're really possibly looking at, unless the criteria are more substantial than I'm suggesting, you're looking at people who may have ownership but absolutely very little knowledge of the business sector or the business that they own?
Well, it's a combination. So I think to be fair, there certainly are quite a number of very competent people. Not everybody has to be a startup. So there's certainly, the program has, as with any of these programs, it will catch some successes and some failures.
Mm-hmm.
There certainly are what appears to be very competent people running some of the businesses. And I guess some of them, like anything, would be less competent. The challenge with a program like this is that success is measured on the amount of money that is dispersed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not measured on the economic value added to the economy. It is measured on number of jobs created. But the problem is, one can create jobs in any sector if government gives it enough money.
Mm-hmm.
So the question that remains unanswered, and possibly there's a very good answer to it, but we don't know the successes of these businesses. All we know, much like the IDC, we just know that the IDC puts a lot of money into businesses, and sometimes it's a little opaque at a firm level what happens with each of those companies.
So essentially, what the key issue is whether the owners are black or not. It's not. Before anything else is met, that has to be established before money is lent or in any way dispersed to a company as considered, or owners to be considered black industrialists. Now, surely, obviously, what's worrying from this point of view is that the government generally, and I'm probably putting it a little bit simplistically, governments are not. Certainly, our government is not generally known for having a great assessment of what this country needs in the way of industries, whether they be service or manufacturing. So, isn't this effectively social engineering to achieve an aim that, while the government and Minister Patel may think would achieve certain results, In the long run is a huge risk because the actual markets won't necessarily support those people unless they are supported by government.
Yeah, so, this, of course, underpins all of our industrial policy and, in fact, just much of our economic policy. So I think government attempts to solve too many problems at the same time with each of the policies it creates. And it tends to want to solve things right at the end of the process. So, for example, I think anyone other than the most cynical would agree that black people have had a pretty rough run of it under apartheid, and not a terribly better run under it in the subsequent 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly is a vulnerable population. And I think we'd be cruel to think that they should not receive some kind of attention. But the problem is the fundamentals that create a competitive economy, one of which is a well-educated workforce, and perhaps more importantly, a well-trained workforce. So not just the university education, but that we also have competent plumbers and electricians, etc. So the problem is you can't fix that problem at the end with a quota or anything else. You have to, you can't replace 12 years of bad schooling with a policy at the end that says you must get something. And that's kind of the heart of this and many of the other problems is, I certainly would have a view and be very supportive of the fact that a lot more should be done to improve the educational outcomes, particularly for black kids in South Africa. But the program here is not addressing that. It's also, by its nature, we're not looking at a small manufacturing business. This is not the lady who is making FETCOOK to sell at the taxi rank.
Mm.
These are all, typically big businesses, which means the preferences are being allocated to people who, if they have a good idea, could probably raise the capital without a problem.
Yeah.
So it's not really solving the bigger problem, which is that the vast majority of South Africans can't get a job. Half of the kids that enter school never finish school. And so it does nothing for them. And the fact that you now have a black employer versus a white employer, probably not that big a deal in your mind when you're, you know, looking for a job. You just want the job. So there's a very kind of small group of people who are benefiting. So they target to have 500 black industrialists created by this program. I'm not sure what the current number is. And, you know, so that's 500 people. If we assume 500 people, you know, you've got 50 billion worth of benefit distributed. I mean, that's an awful lot of money to individual companies or owners of companies, you know, which some will succeed and some won't.
I mean, you make the very important point, and I think this is something that goes way back, and one sees it in the policy and dealing with the public service, is that something that the ANC has not, not understood or chooses to ignore from a policy point of view, is that it doesn't matter who you are, what color you are, and what strata of life you come from. You need a decent foundation at the schooling level to become numerate and literate. And if you don't go to university, and that's not necessarily the be all and end all at all, it's not necessarily what society needs, but whatever training you have, whether it's on the job or whether it's in a technical college type environment, and then you move on into the job space, and it doesn't matter what profession you're in, you need mentorship. You need to learn from people who have experience. There's a vast gap, I'm sure you'll have experienced it yourself, from starting off as a young anything to being actually offering something of value to the society, and that has a lot to do with learning from other people. And from what you're saying, this suggests that crucial middle bit that allows people to get onto a ladder is missing, and this is not making that any better. It's part of the coming in at the end bit rather than earlier on. And until you actually put the focus on the quality of the child and the young adult, you're just going to be spending good money for relatively bad returns, possibly.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, of course, there are other factors as well, you know, not least electricity, the ports to be functioning, and all of these other bits and pieces. The problem, I guess, Sarah, is we have to be competitive, because there isn't really terribly much else that matters. If we're not competitive, people don't get wealthier. Our per capita GDP has steadily fallen since 2007, which means on average, South Africans are worse off than they were in 2007. Now, of course, there are exceptions. And if you're one of the beneficiaries of this program, you'll be one of those exceptions. But the vast majority of South Africans are poorer than they were in 2007. And that's clearly problematic. Mm. But that's a problem that requires an improvement in productivity. And, you know, it's not understood, particularly in an environment which is, we've got a union in government. We have very little sense of what the implications are. For example, the steel sector has just agreed to above inflation increases for the workers in the steel sector for the next 3 years. And that comes, you know, again, this has got nothing to do with whether I think the workers earn a fair wage or not. But the cost of that comes out of the pocket of the businesses. And the bigger companies will ride out the storm, but a certain number of the smaller companies will not be able to afford those increases because what they are paying the person and the output they are getting from that person don't match. And in that situation, you're better off not having the person or buying the machine instead of the person. And this is the problem. You know, I'm not sure how this program does anything to solve the productivity problem South Africa has.
No, I think my sense is that it's almost a kind of illusion or delusion, I don't know, on the part of the government that somehow our reputation as the sort of amazing rainbow nation of 1994, that would carry us somehow in a way that just it can't. When we are part of a larger world, we can't compete with places like China and even there, to some extent, manufacturing is outsourced to countries like Vietnam because of the increasing wealth and expense of the Chinese economy, as I understand. And it's that crucial just getting onto the ladder, and that's what makes for me the idea of the minimum wage being an inflexible amount that has to be met for probably the sort of very much the bedrock of little businesses in this country to A, make an impact, to B, provide a living, and C, to provide an opportunity for people to be employed. It's not in the hallowed halls of the big corporates that everything is going to be achieved or done. What do we do about making both employees and owners of small businesses more successful?
Yeah, so it's hard to start and even harder to run a business in South Africa. I mean, as someone who owns a company, you know, I can assure you this is not an easy environment to work in. You know, part of the minimum wage debate is the other side of that equation is a minimum level of productivity.
Mm.
And what we're setting with a minimum wage is we're telling someone right off the bat, you've just finished school, or even worse, you haven't finished school. And this is the amount of value you need to be able to add to a company. So if you're going to earn 5,000 Rand a month, if you can't add at least 5,001 Rand a month to the company in value, no one will employ you. And it doesn't really matter how terrible it is for you to be earning 3,500 Rand a month, or insert whatever the number is. The fact is, you're not going to get a job at the amount that minimum wage prescribes if you have no ability to add that amount of value. Now, in South Africa particularly, we kind of, the uncounted numbers we must add to the minimum wage is that the unions are particularly violent. So it's not unusual to have a strike with some degree of property damage and in the most horrific circumstances, people injured or even killed. But, you know, on top of that, it's difficult to get rid of somebody who is not terribly productive. And so the cost of employment goes way beyond the direct cost on the payslip into all of those other hidden costs that the employer is aware they may be facing, and so consequently choose to not employ the person.
Mm.
And that's a problem. So the cost of capital in South Africa is far cheaper than the cost of labor. Mm. And so if you can put a machine in that replaces 50 people, you're absolutely going to put the machine in.
Mm. So the problem is that the whole, to avoid replacing people with machines and paying wages for no return on no productive return, is that we've got virtually the highest unemployment rate and certainly the youth unemployment rate in the world, and this none of this is going to make that blind bit of difference. And surely, even, you know, sort of privileged white guys living in suburbs, let's say, we know that our success in life and our enjoyment of living in the country and benefiting from it is as much due to enhancing the lives and getting people into employment, creating businesses, et cetera, et cetera. And this is not really... Government may assist with policy, etc., but this is not really government's forte, is to create businesses.
No. So, in fact, the history of government picking winners is particularly bad. And I might add that's not a uniquely South African phenomenon. But in South Africa, we have a particularly bad track record of identifying winners. I think... The question, and this is kind of a philosophical question, but in all industrial policy globally, the question to be asked is, ultimately, industrial policy is trying to allocate resources better than the market.
Mm.
That assumes an important factor, which is that government has better information than the market.
Mm.
And that's a difficult challenge to overcome, because it turns out that when you're in a market, when you're manufacturing shoes or whatever the case might be, you have to be hyper aware of every nuance in that market,
mm-hmm.
or you run the risk of going out of business. You know, if you're not very good at making shoes, then someone who makes shoes better than you will simply displace you in the market and you will go by the wayside. Now, if we look at governments, well, let's keep it to South Africa, I guess, we find ourselves in a position where no state-owned enterprise has the ability to go out of business. And this creates a culture where you don't worry about failure. Mm. The most important signal that a capitalist economy gives you is failure, not success. The number of successes in a capitalist economy are relatively small compared to the number of failures that arise. Businesses go out of business all the time.
Mm.
And the problem when you bring a government mindset to this is you yourself have no skin in the game.
Mm.
It doesn't matter. You know, if we look at what's happening with ArcelorMittal and the dilemma they're having with Newcastle at the moment, you know, having to wrestle over whether they close it or not, government doesn't deal with that. I mean, SAA is still flying despite having received bailouts that I think are over 50 billion rand. You know, yet Kalula is gone.
Mm. Mm.
Because the information doesn't have a way to get adequately processed. And this has got, I guess, Sara, nothing to do with the intelligence or competence of the official in government. It just says that because the official has a different set of objectives and a different set of incentives, they're not sensitive to the signals from the market. And so when government says we're going to create 500 black industrialists, and to do that, we're going to stick 50 billion rand into this program. The question is, why? Mm. You know, why would you do that? I mean, why do you pick 500? Why don't you pick 5,000 for that matter? And we'd have an even greater success. The problem is the job of government is to create an environment where business can thrive. And, you know, business will then employ people. I've never met a company who said we have to set up so we can create all of these jobs. That jobs are merely a side effect running out of resources, and then you employ people.
Mm. That's actually very sobering, and I think it supports the truism that we all generally learn far more from our mistakes and our failures than from our successes. Donald, thank you very much. I'm sorry to curtail it there. It's fascinating, and I think it really supports that freeing up the economy and going for growth is the way to start getting South Africa back on track. Thank you very much. I hope to invite you on again and partake of your wisdom in this regard.
Thank you, Sarah. Bye-bye.